You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Reveille, reveille, donks. Look at us now, tip to tip. This is our life. This is our passion. That's the spirit we bring to this show.
I'm Luke Thomas.
I'm Brian Campbell.
This is Morning Combat.
Oh, yeah, right? You thought you'd never hear that again, but we keep coming back. Hey, guys, get fired up. It's Morning Combat. Brian Campbell. Luke Thomas next to me. There. Yeah. All right. That got weird. Hey, folks, look, we're back at it with a bang because this is a monster week. We told you we'd be setting the stage for UFC 299. That's to come. But today, right now, Wednesday, March 6th, 2024, we are two more sleeps, John Anik, from Francis Ngannou versus Anthony Joshua. It goes down in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, a 10-round heavyweight boxing match. And Luke Thomas, I've been saying since the turn of the calendar of the new year that if you circled one combat sports fight over the load, or not really loaded, but over what we see over the next 4 or 5 months, this is the fight. Have anything changed to change that in your eyes?
Well, I mean, everyone's going to have slightly different preferences on all of this, right? So you got a lot of great things to choose from. They just announced Neri and Inoue at the Tokyo Dome in May. I mean, that's a hell of a contest too. But obviously what Francis has done in boxing, shaking it up the way that he did against Tyson Fury, remarkable. Here he is back to the sort of scene of the crime, as it were, taking on Anthony Joshua. And BC, we were talking about this before the camera started rolling. I was looking up the odds because I hadn't seen them yet. Obviously, they're going to differ in a few places, but you've got Anthony Joshua at around minus 400 or so. And you've got Francis at around plus 300 or so, depending on where you look. I am shocked by those odds. Not so much that I find them completely out to lunch. And again, odds are designed to induce betting, so they're not necessarily an accurate reflection of reality. But that, would you ever imagine Francis Ngannou's, once he fought Ciryl Gane, BC, if I'd have told you he's going to fight after this, not MMA, but Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua, and he'll be no worse than a plus 300 when he does it, it just blows your mind. And the way that that can re-alter the combat sports map is basically unlike any other fight that's out there right now.
You said it. And maybe just for me personally that I'm speaking, this is the one I've circled because it's so damn intriguing. And 5 months removed, or five-ish, from last October when Ngannou made his pro debut, also in Saudi, against Tyson Fury. How much has that narrative switched? Let's not forget that when Fury and Ngannou signed up for their non-title bout, we were basically saying, hey, boxing, what are we doing here? Usyk Fury's supposedly around the corner. And if Ngannou is going to get the fight, at least put the title on the line to make it worth it. It didn't happen. What did happen was Ngannou shocked the world with his performance, knocking down a out-of-shape and likely unfocused Tyson Fury. But Luke, if it was just one punch and one knockdown, you'd be like, wow, what a crazy moment, near upset of a lifetime. But the fact that Ngannou finished strong, fought the rest of the way, no, his output wasn't big enough to have a larger dispute on the scorecards and losing a split decision. But Ngannou disciplined and disarmed the greatest heavyweight of this modern era, or so we think, in unbeaten Tyson Fury. And he's actually earned this shot against Joshua, which, correct me if I'm wrong, Luke, but the winner of this fight, even with Usyk and Fury being signed up for two fights, the winner of this fight will legitimately have a say about who's next for the undisputed heavyweight championship. Not in a crossover Maymac, let's get Francis in there, let's get him his bag and run. He will have earned it if he wins on Friday. That is mind-blowing. That shows you how much the narrative can change. But I think more than anything, what it shows you is Francis is in the midst of the greatest story ever told in combat sports history. Really, seriously, really. We got to find out the next chapter, whether this is a fairy tale or an aberration or whatever. But that adds a lot to the proceedings heading into Friday.
Yeah, I mean, the worst case scenario, and I don't even know how close this would be. I'm just saying the worst case scenario is he just has to go back to MMA and fight somebody there of probably not a big name stature, but, you know, a comfortable lead he would have on his opponent in terms of skill and experience at the worst case scenario. But the better to best case scenarios, BC, are insane. If there's any kind of controversy about the decision, he could get a rematch. That'd be three fights in boxing, two against Anthony Joshua, and then Tyson Fury potentially could be with another one down the line. But having already booked that, there's that. But to your point, it sounds insane. It sounds completely like, oh, here's a couple of MMA guys. I know it's not really fair to you, BC, but it's a couple of MMA guys just, you know, overhyping Francis's chances. Guys, we didn't set the odds. I'm not necessarily in any way predicting Francis wins, but I just told you he's plus 275 in certain places. When was the last time Anthony Joshua had an opponent at plus 275 that had this kind of punching power? He doesn't have to hit you very often. He just has to hit you at all, and it seems to have a dramatic effect. And so the point I'm trying to make here is all of this doesn't make sense. All of this sort of really could shape and have gravitational pull in all kinds of directions. But to answer the question you put, BC, about what it means for potentially being next in line for the winner of Fury and Usyk, there's no doubt in my mind you could do that, especially if it's an emphatic win. And if Francis does it, I don't even know if my brain can comprehend that, BC. I don't even know if my brain can comprehend what it might mean for Francis to advance his career in that way. Something we've never seen before and probably would never see again. That rare, that special.
The thing is, we're working under this working belief that if you're the PFL, you're certainly sitting on pins and needles here. You signed Francis, you gave him the world, and I don't damn them for that. It was a monster signing. It was in the midst of Francis trying to improve fighter conditions for everybody. He was given a seat on their global board. He was given equity in PFL Africa, for whatever that will end up meaning. But the idea is if he upsets Joshua, he probably won't even be fighting for the PFL this year when this is their biggest year possible, because it's going to lead him to the things like an undisputed title fight or Deontay Wilder, for all we know. But don't forget, too, on the same card on Friday, on the undercard, Zhang Zhilei, the heavyweight, the 6'6" Chinese heavyweight, who won that secondary WBO title with the big win over Joe Joyce, he's taken on Joseph Parker, who just outpointed Deontay Wilder and really made him look bad. You could easily see Francis getting the winner of that if he wins, or maybe even if he loses, but looks good in doing so. The whole point is the landscape for him is only going to be about money moving forward, whether that's really what he's all about or not. I don't think he is. I think that's part of this. But the other half of it is he might actually F around and be a legitimate heavyweight title contender, win or lose Friday. And I can't even believe that. So how did we get here? How is this possible? It's certainly part of Francis's incredible story, which in his mid-20s in Cameroon and the salt mines or something, he's like, no, I want to become a heavyweight boxer, so I'm going to go to France, but then get delayed in jails and then be homeless sleeping in my car and then end up in an MMA gym. And oh, by the way, he took a detour and became the UFC heavyweight champion and then crawled through the Shawshank tunnel of shit to get through Cyril Gane with no knees. So there's been a crazy story to get here. But Luke, when you watched the performance of Fury versus Ngannou, even if you can put to the side some ideas that I do think are true, Fury overweight, Fury maybe not taking it as serious as he could have, Francis's technical ability, his footwork, his ability to make himself dangerous was far more advanced than it should have been. We can say that first and foremost, that this isn't just about freak power in both hands. His setup, his ability to land that perfect counter left hook that dropped Fury, that's not fooling around. That was the moment where all of this changed, because I think all of us, including Tyson Fury most specifically, looked up and was like, oh crap, he can. It's not just that he has this heavy artillery, he has the delivery system. He knows how to make himself awkward yet efficient enough to be that dangerous. Luke, didn't see that coming. Seriously, didn't see that coming.
And what it shows on top of all of that is his ability to make reads. Right? Making reads. Because if you actually go and look what happened, it's not exactly apples to apples, but you remember when Gervonta Davis knocked out the uppercut. Who was the uppercut guy?
One shot, one kill.
Santa Cruz, yes, Leo Santa Cruz. When he knocked out Leo Santa Cruz, you'll notice Santa Cruz went with the right hand one, two, and then was the third time right after that he gets hit with the uppercut. It wasn't quite like that, but the point I'm trying to make is if you actually go back and you watch the tape, this was a third round knockdown that Ngannou scored. What ended up happening was you had Tyson Fury going to the well one too many times with that right hand. And so what did Francis do? He read it and came right over the top with perfect timing on a very overconfident and frankly a little bit, I won't say listless as an opponent, but not inspired performance necessarily from Tyson Fury. So you have this ability for a guy to make reads in real time in a secondary sport. I mean, we often, I say this over and over again, we focus on Francis's power because it is real. He is a dynamic puncher. How much of one in MMA will, or excuse me, boxing, he's only had the one fight. We'll see how it goes in this one. We'll get a better judge of it. But still, pretty good reason to believe he's a dynamic puncher. But the thing that we always lose sight of, BC, is how smart this guy is. I think he's a smart businessman. Look at how he's guided his career. And he is a pretty quick learner. The biggest example of that may not necessarily be what he showed you in boxing, but look at his development, even in his 30s, between the first and second Stipe Miocic fights. These were radically different fights, and it was because Francis had this dude on his heels, hitting him with shots he did not expect, he did not see coming, he did not anticipate. They were linear, they were clever, and they were powerful, and he closed the show in the end. I fully expect Anthony Joshua to be better, but I also expect Francis to be better than we saw him the last time. His own trainer, Dewey Cooper, has told me there's not other MMA fighters who can do this. Francis is one of one. But when you really wrap your mind around what that means, it means he's capable. He's trying the very difficult here, but he is capable of more than the average sort of even elite guy in a similar circumstance.
Well, all we can do is compare the, even though crossing over from one sport to the other is becoming so regular that, like, you know, you got things like BKFC and formerly Triller that are combining athletes from both sports regularly. We're seeing older boxers boxing, rising MMA guys, all that. But it's always been the same thing, more or less. Unless the MMA fighter is extremely younger or has an extreme size advantage, it's obviously hard for them to close that gap so quickly. Impossibly hard. I mean, who did it best? Conor McGregor, probably, yet, you know, you can pull holes in that and say it was a Floyd who was 40, 2 years retired, didn't take it so seriously, waited till Conor got tired. And also, Luke, most importantly, the biggest criticism of Conor's boxing game in that big landmark 2017 fight was overnight, you can't just switch the footworks and the technique and the delivery systems to be able to be that crisp to transfer your power. It didn't look like Conor McGregor was able to transfer nearly close to the one-punch, four-ounce glove power that he had with the big boxing gloves and the different stance. Okay, maybe Anderson Silva was the best who made that transition that quickly against a washed Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. and ended up getting the Jake Paul fight. But like even Nate Diaz going in against Jake Paul fought well, but it's rudimentary. It obviously justified that it is, right? Any of these crossover in recent years, you go, okay, wow, if only they had started that younger and they put their nose to the grind, who could they have been? They probably could have been decent. With Francis, we're literally arguing whether he just beat Tyson Fury. We're literally trying to say, well, you know, the odds aren't here that are that bad here that he could do the same against Anthony Joshua. So, yes, we are looking at one of one. All the times that we heard him and his team say confident things and maybe laughed to ourselves or said, wow, you know, that's a fun way of chasing a bag and justifying it, talking up your chances. No, those chances punched Tyson Fury right in the face with his left hand and dropped him. So the equation has changed. But not to leave AJ out of this discussion, let me bring Anthony Joshua in. Luke, how much would our excited anticipation for Friday's fight, which is already very high, how different would it have been in your eyes if Anthony Joshua had not just authored a career, I don't want to say reviving, because that would be a little bit harsh since he won a bunch of fights before that, but a rejuvenating performance against Otto Wallin by being the AJ of old, the AJ from before the first Andy Ruiz fight in 2019, walking him down with two-handed punching and finishing him in round five. I feel like that hasn't, like, taken away Ngannou's chances. It's all, if anything, it's improved the idea that this could be an even better fight. But I almost feel like had that not happened, you might see the odds a near pick 'em. Am I crazy here, Luke? because there was some doubt around AJ coming into that Valine fight.
Yeah, I mean, remember at the time when we were doing MK for the shows that when that fight was happening, you know, I don't think I was alone in thinking, oh, Deontay Wilder might do really well against Joseph Parker. And I don't know how Anthony Joshua was going to do against Otto Valine. Valine having a really good performance. Ultimately, they could have won in a different jurisdiction against Tyson Fury based on the cuts that he had suffered. So I was like, oh, this is not gonna go all that well. It turns out Joseph Parker had a great night against Deontay Wilder, and it was the opposite. To your point, Anthony Joshua looked tremendous against Otto Valine. Powerful jab, backing him up. And not just that, listen, man, the guy had to fight Usyk twice, and that was a tall order. Like, that's a very difficult puzzle to figure out. It's confusing. It's hard to get a beat on him. He has so many different tricks and angles and setups and escapes. It's a really thoughtful way to fight, and it somewhat reduced his physical prowess. The Valine fight was a reminder that, first of all, he might have gotten better as a result of having to train for Usyk twice. Different fights, but I'm just saying, the level of precision you have to put into what you're doing to get ready for a contest like that. And then more to the point, I think in this case, now that he didn't have, his brain wasn't so occupied with the difficulty of fighting a very cerebral opponent. Valine's good, but he's not Usyk. He was able to let some of that ferocity come back. And I really want to say this, we haven't got to the X's and O's yet, but one of the things that's really going to be key for Anthony Joshua in this fight, and a big problem, I think, ultimately, potentially anyway, for Francis, that powerful jab. Yes, everyone saw the right hand that sent Robert Hellenius to the land of wind and ghosts or whatever. You've seen it a million times. But BC, Anthony Joshua, powerful, athletic, prodigious jabber, very clever with it. You see him now changing angles off of it. That is something that I really believe Fury was able to use to great effect to kind of eke out a decision win. But you're talking about a guy here with a powerful jab, a consistent jab. Man, dude, he is poised to look pretty good here. And one more note about this, BC, as you know as well as I do, Tyson Fury maybe got surprised a little bit by Francis Ngannou. I don't think Anthony Joshua is expecting a surprise. I think he's trained for a real opponent, and that's going to make the job for Francis much harder on Friday night.
Well, look, it does bring up an interesting equation where we have to rightfully check ourselves when handicapping this fight and asking ourselves, is Ngannou everything that he looked to be against Fury? And could he actually improve and be better now 5 months later? Or was that the ultimate fool's gold, perfect night, aberration? How many times have we seen a Buster Douglas-type performance, although this didn't get him the W, right? This was more like Balboa versus Creed 1 in that regard. We've certainly seen that before, but like, you can ask the same thing about AJ. Is that Otto Valine performance him fixing the glitch? Or is that Otto Valine performance the new man now? The 4 days in the sensory depth perception chamber or whatever I just made up. Look, he paid a lot of money to sit in absolute darkness and silence for 4 days. And he came out hungry, aggressive, chip on his shoulder, and put that together. Is that matchup dependent against Valine? That's the key question when you're talking about the X's and O's here. Because what happens if Ngannou gets to AJ's chin early? Luke, outside of the Klitschko fight where AJ got up off the deck like a real man at Wembley Stadium in front of, you know, 90K and finished off one of the greatest heavyweight champions in history, we've seen AJ have a flash chin, but I don't know if we've ever seen him outside of that night come back mid-fight and fix the issue. A lot of times when he gets hurt, you see AJ duck for cover. You see AJ need to sort of, you know, figure out that period of peril that he's going through. And it's not always the best physical reactions on there. And Ngannou could put that Mike Tyson quote to life here. You know, that whole, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. I do wonder, as revived as AJ is, can Ngannou do the same thing to him that he did to Tyson Fury, which is hit him so flush, so hard, where it's like, I can't win with my A game anymore. This is almost survival. Now, Fury survived in advance. He literally became a tiny fighter and eked out a victory by boxing from the outside. What does AJ do when he meets that real power? Luke, that's the $50 million question.
It's a great question. I don't know. I tend to think that the fighter we got against Otto Wallin is the one we're going to get here on Friday, but I guess we'll see. One never really knows. Also, again, Tyson got hit because he got a little bit overzealous and paid for it. I don't know exactly what kind of game plan we're going to see AJ come with. The thing that stands out to me about this is the big power of Francis could play a role potentially later in the fight. I mean, it's hard to say. It could play a role anywhere in the fight when you've got power like that. But I guess what I wanted to point out was I'd be very curious to see if...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
To what extent this fight takes place in the clinch? You know, one thing that we saw Francis have a clear advantage of and was very, very good at, framing in the clinch, escaping, striking on the exit, Fury trying to tie him up and couldn't really do it. Fury has a jab, but he often has more of a flick jab. He doesn't have the same kind of power jab that Anthony Joshua does, and that's going to be trouble if you're at the end of it. I wonder if we're going to see Francis try and weave his way to the inside and force a bit of a wrestling match on the ropes, one where, from a wrestling perspective, against frames, bicep control, resetting the angle, and then going, I wonder if he's going to have a decisive advantage there. In fact, I would pick for inside fighting, Francis might have the best chance of winning against any heavyweight under those circumstances. And so, to me, we're talking about the big shot he landed on Fury. Maybe that will play a role here. Again, we do think that Francis's power will be a relevant factor. But if I'm thinking X's and O's, I just don't feel like an outside game is really going to suit him. That inside game could be something. And then it becomes a question of what kind of grind is Anthony Joshua prepared for if he has to grind on those terms?
Sure.
Round over round. That to me is a very interesting question. I can't wait to see how that plays out.
Here's an interesting question related to that. It's how much can Francis Ngannou improve in 5 months? I mean, to put out that performance in his pro debut against that fighter is crazy. It's even crazier now that he's getting Anthony Joshua, a revived one. When we talk about his ability in short time to figure out, to use that mind and adapt and adjust, look, if there's a negative against his performance against Fury, and ultimately the thing that I do truly believe prevented him from getting the round-by-round nod over 10 rounds and losing that split decision, was a lack of output, particularly in the second half. While Ngannou was able to stay a one-punch counter threat that lowered the output of Fury, that forced him into a defensive surviving advance mode, he was unable to put on enough offense where there was no doubt. Was that a stamina issue? It's hard to tell. This is a different setup and timing than 5 rounds in MMA. How much realistically can we expect him to fix some of those glitches? Or before you answer that, Luke, is that the style that most covers up for whatever gap in experience and technique that he'll have against AJ, throwing one punch at a time and remaining dangerous? What I'm basically saying, if we see Ngannou try to take the lead and be the power boxer to set up his right hand, is that going to open him up to get countered in ways that maybe we never found out in the first fight because he was so coiled, so dangerous, getting closer to Fury and putting that threat of that one punch?
I think that the way I would look at it is slightly differently, which is Francis obviously got confirmation that his power would work against Fury pretty early on in that fight, round three, right? And so I'm not saying that this was the deciding factor, but it probably played a role. And in general, I just think his game plan was less is probably going to be more. Now, in the end, he lost the fight because less was not. But what I mean to say is if you open yourself up a lot, right, you really create a lot of openings. Someone who overall has a better skill advantage than you is going to be able to take advantage of that. In other words, if you go up against someone and they're better than you, but you're only thinking defense, you're only thinking cover up, you're only thinking parry, catch, move out of the way, shut them down, they can't really get anything going either, can they? and they can't take advantage of anything you're doing. There's no counter-striking opportunity. Think about, for the MMA audience, think about someone like Yoel Romero. He doesn't have, like, slip and counter. It's really not what he does for the most part. For the most part, what he does is he just spends long times blocking, covering up, not really opening himself, and then he'll have a big explosive moment or something like that. I'm not saying that Francis was doing exactly the same, but what I am pointing out is, BC, Francis took his time, for the most part, to make sure that he had quality opportunities as best he could ascertain them, and didn't go for, like, low-hanging fruit, didn't go for too much stuff, didn't open himself any more than he necessarily needed to, which kept the fight close. It didn't allow him to ultimately persevere in the end, but it allowed him to keep it pretty, pretty close. I think unless this fight is taking place on the inside, you will see something like that again. I would be very surprised, unless he feels like he can do like a Andy Ruiz thing, BC, where he can bait him into exchanging and then just win some kind of exchange with, you know, but he doesn't have Ruiz's hand speed, so that's a little weird. But maybe you know, open it, make him throw with him, and then as a consequence, you feel like you're just going to get the better of that in the end. There's that too, but I just feel like you didn't see Francis throw a lot because he knew if he did, he would be much more easily countered. He was judicious then. I expect him to be judicious, excuse me, on Friday.
The problem is we've never seen Ngannou hurt to the level that it compromised him. He took an absolute beating from Stipe Miocic over the last four rounds of their first title fight, in which he was exhausted, yet never stopped being a one-punch threat, never stopped trying to get back into that fight. So, look, even if Joshua can put his will on him, can impart on him. I mean, you made a great point about the infighting could be the avenue that Ngannou really pulls the terms of the fight in his direction. Even though I don't look at AJ as a great infighter from the standpoint of using his incredible physicality, 6'6" linebacker, NFL frame. In fact, Luke, I think we can criticize him against Usyk both fights for not being the bigger man consistently to try to use that as a way to slow Usyk down. His uppercuts inside, though, are Lennox Lewis-esque. They really are. That is the punch that got Vladimir Klitschko hurt and got him out of there. Can that be a weapon against Ngannou, or is this image of him basically being Homer Simpson in there, even though the meme would be reversed because him knocking him? Did you see that? Francis commented on social media, that picture of the Simpsons of that Mike Tyson-esque character jabbing Homer Simpson. It looked exactly like Ngannou and Fury. In that regard, Luke, it is an interesting question. Can AJ be the bigger puncher inside in ways that does back Ngannou up, that does change the terms of the fight?
Well, I mean, here's one thing we know about Francis. My man has an iron chin. I mean, remember that elbow, that Fury, that super illegal elbow that Fury landed on him, did nothing to him. We've known that Big Francis has a monster chin, and I suspect at some point or another he might need it in this contest. This is a very different fight than Tyson Fury. Yeah, it's a big hill to climb. You're fighting a big-time boxer who's got a lot of experience. It's the same in that sense, but the nuts and bolts of it are much, much different. And I do think that could be a powerful weapon, by the way, for either guy on the inside, if we can just be honest about that. These are two very, very powerful guys. And when I spoke to Dewey Cooper for MK, he really even noted that. In the general sense, it's a very similar fight to Tyson Fury, but when you're really thinking about what you're trying to solve for, it's quite different. So I just feel like if you're Francis, you got to put this fight on your terms as best you can. And to me, that's making Anthony Joshua fight, like literally fight you off, getting off the ropes. You're going to be carrying his weight. You're going to get your bicep controlled for. He's going to be resetting wrestling angles on you, using his head to drive you over. Some Errol Spence tactics a little bit along those lines. Let's see what he does. Let's see what he does.
All right, let's bring this thing home here, Luke. It's time to make the prediction. It's time to get realistic. The problem is there's a lot of elements to this fight that I thought were unrealistic, only Ngannou is proving us wrong step by step. I mean, I'm trying to imagine what we would say about him if he goes in there and knocks out Anthony Joshua. It would be so incredible. Yet, Luke, I don't want to put that pressure on him because the story is already insanely incredible. Getting into this fight, as we laid out, is, can he win it? I think he can. But I think the odds are telling you the true story of this fight, the difference in athleticism and obviously technique and pure boxing experience. Can Ngannou get a knockdown? It's certainly possible. It's going to be more possible against Joshua than he did against Fury, which he did. I still think, though, we're headed to a similar result.
A close surviving win for Joshua by decision, in which he does get off big punches. He does gain his respect against Ngannou. He is also covering up and sheltering himself at times, but he survives the danger. I think, Luke, we're going to look at an 0-2 Ngannou, but it's all going to be positive like it was after the Fury fight. It's all going to be, okay, he didn't get those two against the two greatest heavyweights of this modern era. But what about Wilder? What about Joseph Parker? What about whomever, right? What about that inevitable Fury rematch that I feel like inevitably is going to happen in the next 18 months? Give me Anthony Joshua by unanimous decision, but Ngannou will earn his respect again.
I'll take Anthony Joshua as well. Anthony Joshua just should not lose this fight, right? Just shouldn't. But Francis has a way of surprising everybody and beating the odds. So give me Anthony Joshua winning. I do think in the end he'll get his hand raised. I might go split decision. But I also think, BC, could he KO Francis? I don't think that's the craziest thing in the world. Could Francis KO him? It seems unlikely, but I wouldn't rule it out. I just feel like in the end, Anthony Joshua will get his hand raised, but Francis is going to make his mark. Let's see.
A big deal. Friday, I believe the walk time and for the main event is around dinner time on the East Coast, about 6 p.m. Eastern time, although the card begins around 11 a.m. I'll be on HQ Live afterwards. I believe we'll have some type of MK post coverage of some form. But look, I'm fired up. I'm happy to be here. I want to give the people what they want, which is full frontal action.
Like the Dune popcorn cover. You know what I'm saying? Like yeah, the Dune popcorn cover.
I wish I would have got one. So, Luke, at my theater, they didn't offer them, like, at all. They were like, no, we never received them.
I don't believe them. I think
they must
lying.
Have known where I live, Luke. They must have known this is something I'm into, right? Yeah, all right. Hey, that was Luke Thomas. This is Brian Campbell, Mikey Bormal of CBS Sports on the ones and twos. Thank you for joining us. Big announcements to come. It's not an announcement about an announcement. It's an announcement that's going to change our lives and yours, too. We out of here. Thank you.